Hey guys, welcome to another Grayscale Gorilla podcast. Today I am broadcasting from Wheeling, Illinois, which is just northwest of Chicago. And I'm up here at the Chicago Pinball Expo, which is Chicago's yearly pinball festival tournament exposition of pinball. And I'm sitting here, you know, I'm doing the podcast from a hotel room here where I'm staying for the weekend. And I'm thinking about obsession. I'm thinking about my obsession with pinball, about this whole year of being obsessed with it and learning about it. And I'm trying to, you know, make a connection to all of my other obsessions. And I thought I'd sit here and talk to you guys about being obsessed with something, about my history of obsession, about my history of obsessing on pinball and where it's taken me, and my history of obsessing over a bunch of other things and where that has taken me. Hopefully in a way to kind of draw a conclusion on what to do with those things you're obsessed with. Pinball for me has always been in the background. I grew up basically in an arcade. I grew up in a roller rink in Michigan. And I had a home, of course, but when I say I grew up in a roller rink, I ended up at a roller rink a lot, and that's because my mom worked there. My dad was a fireman, and also on his days off, he'd also work as an electrician, which meant during the day, especially after school, I followed my mom to the roller rink, you know, because it's a pretty good babysitter. It's not very dangerous, and you can kind of hang out. And when I say it's at a roller rink, I want to be clear. This isn't if you've gone to a skating thing with school when you were younger or even as an adult. If you've gone to like a normal skating session, you know, you might think it's pretzels and popcorn and the disco ball and skating around in circles and holding your sweetheart's hand from junior high. That's not what I grew up around. I grew up around figure skating. My mom was a figure skating coach, so what figure skating and also artistic skating, which means all the stuff that you've seen in the Olympics on ice skates, the jumps, the flips, the spins, the dancing, the awesome costumes and dresses and all that stuff. That's what my mom did, but she did it for roller skating instead of ice skating. So when I'm at the rink, all the lights are on. There's no, fancy Gap Band music to skate around to. And most importantly, especially at my age, the arcade is off. The arcade games are off. And what that means is I had to spend a lot of hours staring at arcade games that were off. And that is heartbreaking for my generation and me in particular. So what I ended up figuring out was if I went and bugged the manager of the skating rink when he was pulling all the tokens, I'm sorry, the quarters out of the games, out of the arcade games, then he would every once in a while would either give me a couple quarters because he knew he would get them back right away in another game. I would turn around, I would play another one. And he also was, you know, tall enough, frankly, to turn on the arcade games and to allow me to play them kind of after hours while everyone's getting their lessons and trying to do their triple toe waltz, lutzes or whatever. I would try to sneak a couple games of Defender in. And this worked out. I would go bug him. He would, you know, probably in a good way of getting me off his back, would give me a couple quarters, or he would reach in the machine and he would flick this switch. He would flick the coin door switch, which is the switch that the coin hits when it goes through to allow a game. He would just flick that a couple times and he would close the door, pull the key out, and allow me to play, you know, two or three credits. And that was great. That was fantastic. So I was able to, you know, kind of convince him as I got older, you know, can I turn on a game, play it, give you money, turn it off, I'm nice and gentle, I'm not going to break it, kind of during the off hours of the arcade. And, you know, we kind of had a deal worked out, you know, where I would give them the quarters that they, you know, wanted to make on the machine if I turned it on and played it. So there, so then now I have it, right? Now I have a whole arcade to myself. Turn on one game. I could play it if I pay for it, of course, and I could turn it off. And awesome, right? So I got my fill. I got my fill on a lot of games. You know, and this is around the years, like just before you're old enough to go, you know, stay at home by yourself. You know, I'm still going to the rink. And at that point, you know, I was even skating. I was taking lessons and I was doing a pairs routine with my sister, you know, where we throw each other around. You know, that you've seen that stuff where they throw each other around on the ice and they pick each other up and spin around the floor and crap. I did that with my sister. We were a team. We'll have photos later, I promise. But in between the lessons, I, you know, went in and played, you know, some Street Fighter, and some Mortal Kombat, and some Off Road, right? And some Burger Time. And every once in a while, I would play a pinball. And the earliest one I remember they had was a Cyclone, and they kind of went through a few games by the time I stopped going there. But I would play the pinball game, and I was pretty good at Street Fighter. And frankly, I was a kid of the '80s. I liked video games a lot. I played my eSWAT, and which does not hold up. eSWAT does not hold up. But every once in a while, I would play the pinball game, and when I did that, it was definitely a different way to play something. It wasn't the same every time, but most importantly to me, it was like a giant marble machine. I played with marble machine stuff at home all the time. I had Marble Works, which was this great plastic set of kind of like construction racing kit where you build a racetrack for marbles. And I played the heck out of that thing. And pinball, to me, was a gigantic marble machine where you can throw it up ramps and go around. And on top of all of that, there's also audio going along with it. And there's also a score going along with it. So now it's making a marble track and then keeping score of how good you are at this thing. And that added a whole level to the whole marble thing. Because, you know, you build a good marble track, kind of rolls down and the red marble wins. And so, you know, big deal. Now we got scores, we got audio, we have themes. You know, you get this, you get the carnival themed one that they had, the Cyclone. With the roller coasters on it, like literal roller coasters, not literal. By literal, I mean, you know, marble roller coasters on, you know, on the game. And so I, you know, every once in a while I'd play pinball. It wasn't the thing I played the most, but I definitely played it enough to know I liked it. Well, then they got better machines. What happened was I grew up, you know, in the roller rink. And as I grew up, the games got better. They got a diner. And I love diner. I played the heck out of diner. And the diner, I remember, had no tilt on it, so, which meant when you got it up in the cup, there's a little cup saucer in the top. And the more rotations around the saucer you get, the more points you get. And I would get it up in there, and I would just shake the machine around, and I'd have a rhythm so I could keep the ball up there indefinitely and always get the free game, which meant I could just keep playing. And that was great. So then the diner's there. Now they have, you know, a Guns N' Roses there. I played that, and I got pretty okay with pinball. Well, then I was allowed to stay home. Then I was old enough to where I could, you know, come home from school. The house is empty. I can hang out there, right? And then I had a guitar. I had other crap to do, right? Well, somewhere in late high school, it was discovered, probably through some loud conversation, that me and my buddy Dave both liked pinball when we were younger, and we, you know, just we're getting cars now. We can go where we want. We found a local place in town, kind of a diner kind of place. It's kind of a diner by day and a bar at night. And we would play. And we'd play Tales from the Crypt. And we found a Medieval Madness. That was a little bit later. That's after high school. But we found some local games. And we started making deals with the bar owners and the bartenders and stuff that we're not here to drink alcohol. I know you need to card us and all that, but we kind of snuck in and said, hey, we just want to sit here and give you money on this pinball machine. And they would let us come in and play Twilight Zone and and Tales from the Crypt, I remember, and Star Trek and all that stuff. And we would play. There was also a local arcade, Area Code, and that we went there and played quite a bit as well. And then college hit, and it was dead. It was dead. You know, pinball was a thing in the background for me for years. And, of course, you know a lot of the other things I've been obsessed with in the meantime, between, you know, my various careers of obsessing over things like magic, selling magic tricks, obsessing over magic, and then getting a job as selling magic tricks and, you know, doing we'll get to that stuff later. So here we are. We're you know, going through all this other stuff I'm obsessed with, and it comes to last year, last August. And last August was when I was in San Francisco. I was working for Hipstamatic, my friends over there at Hipstamatic, doing some work, and I was kind of, you know, not alone in the city. I knew those guys, but those guys lived in other parts of town, and everyone would take off out of work, and I was staying at the studio, and you know, I found a local bar that everyone said was nice, and I showed up and grabbed a beer, and they had pinball machines, and I do what I did, you know, other years, is just, hey, there's a pinball machine, I'll play it, no big deal. Well, something changed this time when I was playing it. It dawned on me that this game was actually designed by somebody. And this realization always comes to me in the dumbest way, which seems like such a no-brainer thing. Of course, everything man-made is man-made, right? But I have to learn this lesson over and over again. But specifically with a pinball machine, I looked down at the game, and it had a designer on it. Designed by, right? And then I had to go find this guy. I had to go find what other games he built, right? I had to go learn if there are similarities between the different games that they've built. I can learn that he, you know, worked for different companies, and, you know, he built some of my favorite games growing up, right? Now I'm hooked, right? Because now these are designers. These are people that have their own obsession about their own job and have gone out and made a career out of building pinball machines. How cool is that? How cool is that? So now I'm learning, you know, who did what. I'm learning about the artists that do the art on the play field. I'm learning about the artists that do the design. You know, there's different people that do the design. And then, it dawns on me later, even after all this stuff, that there's somebody animating the back glass. And not the back glass, but right below the back glass, you have that little DMD section where they show you your score. You know, the newer games have the DMD kind of orange or red area that display your score and explosion stuff. But there's also custom-made animations on there. And that's an animator. That's a job. Somebody's job it is to wake up and make animations for pinball games. Well, then I had to find out who that was and see that the company and learn that the company that builds all the pinball machines right now. Now, there's a lot of new other companies since then that have been popping up. But the main company that's been building pinball machines for the last 10 years is, you know, an hour away from where I live. Not only that, but almost every other pinball machine that's ever been made that I've played in my entire life has been built within 10 miles of where I live in Chicago. In fact, almost all the pinball machines are built in Chicago. So now, not only are there people that make these games, but the people that make these games are here. And they are still here, and they're still making games, and they're still around. Well, now it's all coming together, right? So I obsess, and I obsess, and I obsess. And I'm learning, you know, you've fallen into this trap. The internet will tell you. You have a question, the internet will tell you. Well, so now I'm learning, you know, what they've done in the past and what happened to the old companies, and I'm watching the documentaries and going through that whole process. But in the back of all of this is the idea that there are humans, just people that obsessed over and got into this field and presumably are still doing it because they like doing it. And they have a career in pinball. So there's that, coupled with the fact that these games are not just designed to be entertainment, right? Which they are. They're games. But they're designed to be coin-operated games, which is different from designing something like this microphone I'm speaking into. If you design a microphone, you want to build a good microphone for a good price, or maybe it's an okay microphone for a really cheap price, or maybe it's a really good microphone for a really good price. Whatever it is, you're designing one thing for somebody to buy once and take home and use, and maybe tell their friends if it's good. That's a certain type of design, right? It's a totally different way of design to design something that people want to pay for, have an experience, and then pay for it again. Especially in a game, right? So these games, these coin-operated games, are designed for you to be entertained, but not be entertained for a long amount of time, right? So they don't want you to play all day, because if you're playing, they're not making quarters. But they also don't want it to be too hard or to be too boring or anything. They want you to come back. The idea is for you to play the game, feel like you learned enough about the game so that you almost get to that jackpot, or you almost get to shoot that shot, but you didn't quite do it because now, but now you know. Now you think next time you play, now you're going to get it, right? And that's all part of the design process. So I'm reading and learning about that. And it has to come back to every time that there are people, there are humans that are doing, making these decisions for every part of this way down, from the mechanics, from the custom-made parts that they have to design. They have to carve some of these parts, you know, and then remanufacture them. It's, as you could tell, it's been a long time. But now, to hopefully tie things back, I'm here, and a year later, a year ago, I went to this expo, and that was only 2 months after this obsession started, and I didn't know anything, and I walked around in awe at like all the little parts. There's people selling nothing but light bulbs here, nothing but light bulbs for pinball machines. There's people selling nothing but back glasses, the art on the back. There's people selling nothing but hardware and glass, and there's people selling beverage koozies that you can install on the side of your pinball machine, and so you could put your beer there when you play. There's a whole industry around this silly hobby that I thought was silly, right? And I show up and there's hundreds of people here, sometimes for different reasons. Maybe they're here to compete in the tournament, which is also something I've been trying to, you know, compete and learn with, and learn from all these players that have been playing for years and are so good. And there's a whole culture behind the tournaments. There's a whole culture behind the hardware. There's a whole culture behind the design and the manufacturing and the art. There's towels you could buy with pinball machines on them, for crying out loud. And I'm here a year ago, not knowing anything and ready to learn everything. And I've always loved that part of being obsessed with something. The idea that you have stumbled into something you are obviously obsessed with, obviously hooked into, and you know how much is out there. You know how much you don't know. And that's the coolest part. Because sometimes you don't know how much you don't know. You just know you're into it. And that was my old history of pinball. I'm into this thing. It's not a video game. I like it. It's like a marble thing, blah, blah. But now, and specifically a year ago, I knew how ignorant I was and how ready I was to learn all this stuff. And that made it very, very exciting for me. So I started asking questions, and I started meeting people, and I started seeing the people that were in the documentaries I watched, and then saying, hey, I saw you in that documentary. That was really cool. And asking, you know, how they got into this stuff. And there's nothing I like more than talking to somebody that is geeked out about this. And that's what I did. And that's what I've been doing, you know, part-time basically for the last year, is obsessing over this thing and meeting the people and learning how it's made, who makes these things, and the business behind it, and the hobby behind it, the learning how to play better, which is a whole different side of the game. And it's gotten me to the point, and the reason I want to talk to you about it specifically in regards to your obsession, the thing that you're obsessed with, is because it can be such a silly thing to think about. Pinball, you know, is that something I want to spend my time on and obsess over? And I look back at all these things that I've obsessed over and I've put in the time and I've went and met the people that have done these things, and I have never, never regretted following my obsession as hard as I can. I have never looked back at time wasted doing something. I started as a career. My first job was selling magic tricks. And it all came from the idea that I got obsessed with magic. I bought all the books. I bought all the decks, learned how to do the card tricks. And when I was old enough to get a job, which was 14 or 15 or something in Michigan, I walked into the mall. My parents said, you know, where do you want to work? And I looked at the pretzel joint. And their stupid hats, and I said, I don't want to work there. And I looked at the Gap or whatever, and they're folding clothes and ringing up registers. That looked awful. I don't want to work there. And then I looked at this place. It had nothing but kids running around selling baseball hats. Everything else is just, I don't care about any of this stuff. Then I saw it. I saw a magic stand where they were selling magic tricks, and I said, I want to work there. And they were hiring. I showed them how I did some magic tricks. And they said, sure. And of course, you know, I was 14, 15, and they gave me, you know, no money, minimum wage or whatever it was. But that's it. I obsessed over magic and had enough skill and enough I knew enough about it to not have to work at the pretzel place and not have to work at the Applebee's or whatever, right? That was worth it to me. And then I go to, you know, I've always been into music, and I play, you know, music, and I started to, you know, kind of realize that playing music is probably not the best career, but, you know, learning how to record bands and doing that stuff might be kind of fun. So I learned Pro Tools and did all that stuff, and then I helped with music. A record label, recording bands, recording, you know, friends' bands, my stuff, and you know, basically starting a career in that, right? Opportunities came by following these obsessions. And of course, you know, me and photography and my history on, you know, getting a digital SLR back when they were just popping up and posting a photo a day and eventually, you know, getting paid to fly around the country and take portraits of employees and friends and basically what anyone would consider the first part of a career if I were to stick with it in photography. And same with animation, same with 3D, same with my history and that stuff. Obsessing and sitting in front of a computer and meeting the people that do what I was obsessed with, asking them enough questions and being diligent enough to learn and play and put the time in and eventually come out the other end with a job, right? And I look at this pinball thing and I go, you know, does this make sense? You know, I look at my crazy history of things that have panned out as far as obsessions have gone. And I look at this pinball thing and, you know, especially back then, and I'm like, you know, is this all worth it? I have all this other stuff I'm doing, and I have this site, and I have all these other things I'm up to. And will that, you know, is this a thing I want to do with my life? And I've never regretted it before. And I don't regret it now. And I sit here a year and 2 months after first really being obsessed with this whole thing, and now I am helping build a pinball machine. I am now a name on the list. When people go look and see, figure out who's building this stuff, I will be in there. I'll be a small little footnote at the bottom, but I've had the opportunity now to do some animation for a company that's building a brand new pinball machine. And my animation will be on it. And my design will be on it. And that blows my mind. That makes me, again, never ever regret the time and energy I put into all these crazy hobbies. And I hope that, what I hope is that you don't have a hobby where you sit and worry that it's not worth your time. And for me, it has always panned out. I don't know if that's always will be the answer. If it, of course, doesn't always pan out in the perfect way, like with, you know, my awesome career in magic, as you know me, of course, didn't. My recording history, my photography, all these things are not long-term careers, right? They're not my legacy. But the amount that I've learned and the amount of fun I've had and the amount of people that I've met and knowledge that I've hopefully pulled from all these weird things have come to make me who I am. And I could not ever regret any one of those things. And I look at a year, just over a year later, and I am now, you know, starting to become a part of this industry and helping build an actual pinball game. And I mean, I wish I could tell you more about it. I definitely will have a whole post, and I want to show some behind the scenes and stuff on this pinball thing. And I will have more details later, but I do have to be a bit vague about it right now. But it's amazing to me that this works. And I try to, the reason I'm sitting here on this, you know, this podcast on a website about animation and talking about pinball is because, hopefully not to bore you guys about my childhood, but hopefully as a way for you to look at whatever thing you're obsessed with and to lean into it harder, is to obsess about it harder, to commit to it harder, and specifically to show up to events. And I know I talk about this with, you know, motion graphics meetups and all that stuff, but it really is a big difference between knowing somebody online, knowing their name, and then walking up to them and shaking their hand and saying, thank you for making that, thank you for teaching me that, thank you for building that, and asking a simple question. And I find myself doing this repetitively, which is asking a question about a decision that they made and why they made it. And it's not a critical question. It's something simply as simple as watching one of the best pinball players last night get one of the highest scores I've ever seen on a game that I've tried to play 100 times and not even gotten 10th of the score that he did. And I asked him what is your path to that? What is your thinking? How do you do that? Where do I concentrate? And he goes, you know what? I hit this, and then I hit the first thing I do is I lock, and then what I'm going to do is I'm going to hit Wolverine until the Wolverine multiball starts. And then the next absolute thing I'm going to do is get the Adderall, but you have to light the Adderall. So make sure your Adderall is lit. Shoot it into the Adderall. Get the extra ball going on the multiball, and then get as many jackpots as you can until you drain. That's my first thing. And of course, that's not the whole story, but that is a great start. And as by asking that question, I now have knowledge I didn't have. And frankly, now I'm better at the game than I was before I asked the question. And the reason meeting people in person and having that interaction, I think, is much different is because that interaction can happen online. But the interaction to, I think, be a part and to get a phone call, be a part of your industry, whatever thing it is you're obsessed with, I think a lot of that comes from being personable. A lot of it comes from shaking hands, saying thank you, and smiling, and asking a question. And I always like that. When people ask me questions about what I do, and I get to tell them some of the problems and processes that I have in animation and heck, I go speak at schools and do all this stuff because I like doing those things. People like talking about what they like doing. My thought is that you obsess harder. Now, don't obsess about 20 things at once, and don't obsess about 3 or 4 things at once. But if you have a thing you're into, man, go really be into it. Or don't, you know, or don't. Go find something else. I think really pushing into something is helpful. Not that you have, you know, let's say this is why I think sports is such a big deal. And I'm not a sports guy. I don't follow it very well. I'm a very fair weather sports fan. You know, if the Tigers are doing well, I watch them. If the Lions are doing well, I watch them. If the Bears are doing well, now I'm in Chicago. If the Bears are doing well, I'm very fair weather. I don't have my local team and whatever. But the reason I think it's so popular over just the sporting event is that it's a very, very easy thing to have a conversation about. It's a very easy thing to obsess over and to obsess with your friends over and to have a passionate conversation about and to argue and say, no, this is this way and this is that way. That type of conversation in something way more specific, I think, is a lot more fun than a general thing. It's like, you know, like arguing about the weather or something, you know, with sports. But for me, taking that idea that you have opinions, you have things to share, you have things to learn, and getting in a room with people like that and geeking out over it, I think it's important. I think it's led to so many opportunities for me and to obsess about the things I do and even, you know, get paid for it, which is the ultimate, right? For me, it has been. For me, a career doing a bunch of stupid stuff like this and actually getting paid to pull this stuff off, I can't ask for anything better. And I hope that that thing that you're obsessed with is something that, you know, this Sunday, instead of watching a football game, you know, if that's your thing, be into that. But I think there might be something else that you are really, really into or want to be into. It's to play guitar or you know, learn language. I don't know what it is. Or play pinball. Go this Sunday instead and go lean in there and see what happens. It's always paid off for me. And I even just the people I meet, it's been worth it. So with that said, I am going to go do that right now. I'm in a hotel room above a giant pinball expo that is happening below me, and I will go shake hands, and I will hopefully go meet more people and learn from them and go be obsessed. And I hope you do too. Thanks for listening, guys. I'll see you in another live show. I'm sorry, this one's not live. I usually do them live, and we'll get the questions and stuff back next week. But I hope you guys enjoyed the show, and I will see you next week. Go be obsessed, guys. Bye, everybody.